You're listening to the Full Contact Fighter Radio Network.
Hey guys, this is Dennis Kang. Hey,
this is Mr. Cripples, a.k.a. the Cat Smasher.
Hey, this is John the Natural Alessio.
Hey, this is Rashad Evans.
Hey guys, this is the Big Frog, Jeff Curran.
Hey, this is Mac Danzig.
Hey guys, this is Jason the Athlete McDonald.
Hi, this is Ivan Salvey.
Hey everybody, this is Joe Seltzer, Jay Dirksen.
Hey, it's Mark Machine Hunting here.
Hey everybody, you are listening to the world's most handsome fighter on the planet. Yes, this is El Guapo, and you are listening to Full Contact Fighter Radio with Kelsey Mowat.
Welcome back to yet another edition of Full Contact Fighter Radio. I am your host, Kelsey Mowat, coming to you from Vancouver, British Columbia. Joining us this time around for probably the 70th or 71st time or so is Mr. Brendan Lear from Edmonton, Alberta. Brendan, how are you doing?
The awesomeness of that fact isn't really reflected in your voice, Kelsey.
Yeah, well, I'm trying to sound enthusiastic about it, buddy, but... You know, I'm a little tired. It's the end of the weekend and whatnot. I just not feeling overly energetic, even though I am excited about the show, if that's all right.
Do they have some kind of quaalude dump in English Bay? Is it affecting your water supply?
They might have. I was up pretty late last night, so I'm a little tired, but I had stuff to do today and et cetera, but...
I gotcha.
Yeah. But I am excited about the show. We've got Keurig Jenis from MMA.tv coming on the program, the owner, creator of that site. Most people know it as The Underground, or a lot of people know it as The Underground. Of course, that's the forum side, MMA.tv. So he's going to be on the program. Brendan, I would think that he'll have some interesting stories for us. It's a pretty famous mixed martial arts site.
The infamous Keurig.
Yes.
And he's a real good guy. He's a real heads-up inside guy that's been around since the beginning of days of MMA, and he knows the fight scene from every angle. So it's always interesting to talk to someone like that.
Yeah, and there's no questioning that the forum side, in particular, to that site, has had a huge impact on MMA, particularly during the troubled years, the dark ages, so to speak, when people are trying to ban MMA, and that was definitely one way people could stay in touch and. Especially, you know, for smaller shows and things like that, where sometimes there wasn't a lot of MMA media reporting on some of the events, that was another way people could keep in touch and find out about results, etc. at some of the smaller shows. So, definitely a huge component to MMA.
I don't think anyone. I don't think anyone would argue that without the internet and especially, you know, the prominent sites like the Underground, that MMA would even exist today in the way that it does.
And we should pat, you know, Full Contact Fighter on the back, too, while we're at it there, huh, buddy?
Of course. Full Contact Fighter's been around for how long?
10 years now, man.
It's a long time, Kelsey.
Yeah.
It's a long time.
Well, on that note, let's get to it. Keurig's up next. You're listening to Full Contact Fighter Radio.
They fight for different things. For some, it's for fame. For others, it's a job. Some fighters just like to hurt people. Visit BodogFight.com and see who the fighters are and why winning matters to them. They'll have a chance to win, but only if that next round matters more than anything. View highlights, read fighter bios, watch TV episodes, or see when the next live event is. Don't miss any mixed martial arts action. BodogFight.com. Make it matter.
You don't have to be a champion to dress like one. With the Full Contact Fighter Shop, we have all the MMA gear that you see so many of your favorite professional fighters wearing. NHB Extreme Fight shorts, camouflage board shorts, corduroy and camo hats, hooded sweatshirts, to the classic FCF t-shirts, Full Contact Fighter clothing is the number one mixed martial arts brand that any MMA fan must have. Now open is the FCF sticker and banner shop. We have all your favorite IFL team clothing, plus a great assortment of low-priced Pride and MMA DVDs are now all available at the FCF shop. To check it out, head to www.fcfighter.com, pick up the latest edition of the FCF paper, or call 516-676-0033. That number, again, 516-676-0033. Full Contact Fighter, the undefeated, no-holds-barred new source of the world.
Hey, this is Rashad Evans, and you listen to Full Contact Fighter Radio.
Welcome back to Full Contact Fighter Radio, and joining the program now is the owner of MMA.tv, Keurig Jenis. Keurig, how are you doing this afternoon?
Just fine, thanks. Appreciate the call.
Yeah, you know, it's an interesting story, the whole site, and I think some people out there probably would like to hear your thoughts and about what's happened across the MMA world over the last few years, etc. And we'll get into that in a minute. My first question for you is, in case there's some listeners out there who aren't familiar with the site, just tell us quickly about MMA.TV and the Underground, etc., Carrick.
It's one of the largest websites, I think, in all of martial arts. Without a doubt, the most popular portion of the page is a large, actually about 150 different message boards where people can talk about pretty much any aspect of martial arts you want to. And in fact, one of the most popular portions of it is a whole section of the site where you can talk about anything but martial arts. There's forums there for herpetology, which isn't what it sounds like. It's talking about snakes and history and NBA and all sorts of things. So it's an online community for mixed martial arts fans.
And how long has the site been up
now? All the underground is the MMA forum, and the other grounds are the mixture and concoction of all the different groups. Do they all have entry though through MMA basically?
Yeah, I would say almost without exception, every single person in the other ground came to there through their appreciation for mixed martial arts. But they have lots of interests besides fighting, and so we try and accommodate them.
So when the
herpetology was actually for Elvis Sinisek, who's an ardent snake and spider pet owner.
Ah,
so when Kelsey's on the cross-dress ground, he's actually on with other cross-dressers who happen to be fans of MMA as well.
If I could find 15 or 20 cross-dressers that wanted me to put together a site for them, and they were all big fans of the sport, sure, I'd accommodate them.
That's very accommodating.
There you go. One more political charge to lead.
Yeah, thanks, buddy.
Talk a little bit about the inception of the Underground and when you started it and how it's transitioned over the years.
I started wrestling and martial arts in, I think, 72 or 73, and then I opened up a full-time gym in 81, and then the UFC 1 debuted, and I watched it, and I was like, all right, that was a wasted 10 or 15 years of my life. And so, you know, we did what everybody else did at the time. We bought the Hoist and Horion tapes, and then Henzo came out with his tape set, and that was literally, to date, the greatest single present I ever got. My mother bought me the Henzo Gracie tapes for Christmas, and it's a slightly odd story. I have a terrible memory. I can hide my own Easter eggs, and so I started writing down from Henzo's tapes. I started writing down what to do, and then I got a Mac computer and I digitized images, and then I put that with the text, and then I took it to Craig Kukoc. And I said, hey, here's a book. Do you want it? And, like, I'll give it to you for free. Just give me a private lesson or something. And he didn't have any interest in it. And so I said, well, heck, I'll put together a book myself. About 2 years later, I came up with a book. There was a kid at the gym who's a computer whiz. He's super successful now. He runs computers for the New England Patriots, Sonesta Hotels. He's got tons of huge clients. He designed the UFC website. And at the time, he was just, I think he was an undergraduate, and he said, hey, let me build you a website. And at that point, I knew what the internet was, but didn't know much of anything about it. And that's how it began.
Hmm.
Wow, so we're talking back in the day when you had to scour. The internet, of course, was invented right around the same time, or the World Wide Web and the forums as we know them now. You really had to scour the internet looking for any information on jiu-jitsu or MMA.
The part of our site that ended up being popular was the message boards, but that was really just an afterthought. The thing that I thought was going to be popular was a find a fighter function where people could punch in their state and their zip code and then find somebody else who wanted to train. Because at the time, this was probably 97 or 98, there was just a handful of people who were into doing this stuff. And I had the idea in the back of my head that there was probably two guys in the same town, both practicing key locks in their garage, and they didn't know each other was there.
Yeah.
For whatever reason, that function didn't end up being popular, and it was just people chit-chatting about fighting that ended up being what defines the site right now.
Kierick, I wanted to ask you, as far as the sports explosion, and there's so much growth, I mean, I can't imagine that you ever, a lot of us, long-time MMA observers, we all hoped that the sport would get to this point, but I think a lot of us as well at the same time didn't really realistically expect it to get to this point necessarily. your reflections on that, considering where the site's come from and where it is now, and just the fact that the sport of MMA is just so huge?
To give credit where credit is due, it was Dana White. I had I was talking with him years and years and years ago now, I think in the lobby of some hotel, and he laid out verbatim, this is what I'm going to do. This is before any of the success. This was maybe he'd put on two shows at that point or something. He said, I'm gonna get it legalized, I'm gonna get it back on cable, I'm gonna get it on free television. And I just watched the guy do it. Boom, boom, boom. And we're all enjoying the results of that.
Yeah.
It's not to take any credit away from, of course, you know, all the guys fighting in the ring and all the promoters working hard and all the journalists who are finally not using that phrase human cockfighting, but I do have to give Dana a dollar and a big hug for really building this sport up.
We'll talk a little bit about the magnitude of the underground now. Like, what kind of numbers are you talking about? How many people are members of the underground, and do you keep close track of things like this?
As far as registered screen names, it's probably a couple of 100,000, but 100,000 of those are about 7 kids that like to troll the site and just come up with endless new names. I think we get about 30,000 uniques a day, which isn't a huge number by any means for the internet, but the average person stays for 23 minutes, which is really, really long. It's a very sticky site, in that sense. And of course, when there's a Pride or a UFC coming up, the numbers skyrocket. They really get mind-boggling sometimes, and our poor servers are going, I think I can, and sometimes they can't.
So how much time do you spend, but you still own and run a gym, how much time do you actually spend working on the site during your day compared to doing what you originally set out doing?
It's a part-time job. I probably spend, I own a health club, and I've got a fight team, and I write a fair amount. I got a lot of different things I do, but I would say the site itself probably takes 20 hours a week of sitting there and trying to come up with new functions people like and moderating the page and that kind of thing.
And do you actively moderate the page still?
I do, absolutely. Yeah, no, I absolutely do. You have to. It's the internet.
I wanted to ask you, Kierrick, as far as the phenomenon of the underground. I mean, it got to the point where people, there would be news breaking on the underground. People would go to the underground as a legitimate news source, and I mean, there's very, very numerous memorable exchanges going on between fighters and fans or whoever. What are your thoughts on that, Kierrick, as far as the site being what it is, as far as mainstream, well-known fighters going on there to check out what other fighters are saying about them, etc.? Did you envision that happening when you thought of the including the forums on the site?
To be totally honest, we never envisioned anything. We just tried to keep our eyes and ears open as to what was popular and then run with that. If people like it, then I'm happy for them to like it, and I try and enhance it in some way. As far as fighters coming on the site, mixed martial arts has the greatest professional athletes on the planet, bar none. I've hung around pretty good athletes from a bunch of different sports, and mixed martial arts just, I couldn't even tell you why. It's just got the toughest and the nicest athletes on earth, and so they don't mind interacting with just, you know, the average fan, some college kid or some guy in his 30s with a couple of kids who watches it on TV. Even the greatest athletes in mixed martial arts don't mind that kind of interaction. Mm-hmm. And that, I think, is one of the keys to the success of the page.
Have you felt any pressure from the ability on the forums to be able to post clips of fights and things like that, and how much has that concerned you in regards to potential legal threats and opening yourself up to possible legal implications of the postings on the site?
Yeah, we've actually always tried to be responsible as far as copyright goes. Originally, it was tape trading. One kid would buy a Mario Sperry mixed martial arts set, Vale Tudo set, and then he'd make 20 copies of it and send it to all his friends for $25 each.
Right.
And that was going on. And so when we originally opened up, we're like, hey, wait a minute, you can't do that. That's not right. And we put a stop to it. And we try and do the same thing now. If a promotion wants to further their brand and get some fights out there for free, it's great. But if a promotion doesn't want their content out there, we don't let it go on. It's basically up to the person who owns the fights to say whether they want them to be seen or not.
Kierick, I wanted to ask you about the advertising on the site, because I think that's one thing that strikes some people when you hear so much about the underground, you hear so much about MMA.TV, and then you go on and it's not really pimped out with tons and tons of advertising, you know, unlike some sites that have a lot of that, and that's understandable. It's a way to make money. So I'm curious, is that a conscious decision on your part, or is there just not as many advertising offers? I would find that hard to believe. Why is the page the site the way it is as far as advertising goes?
My standard for everything I do in this sport is would I use it? And so I come at this from the point of view of a user. And I don't like sites completely loaded up with advertisements. I go to CNN every day, but I never use their video clips because you have to sit through some inane 30-second commercial for, I don't know, a Subaru or something I'm never going to buy ever. And so I don't like that. I don't like to do that to the people that come to my page. You know, I am one of those people on the page, and so I know that it's very purposeful that we don't load it up anymore with tons and tons of ads.
Yeah.
So the last question I want to ask you about the underground per se is, it doesn't take long to observe that the intricate social relations on there, where you have your typical heels and characters who are commonly berated and mocked. Where do you draw the line in terms of where do you draw the line, and how do you decide in terms of who's crossed the line and who no longer deserves to be a member of the community? And what, you know, what's your standard of toleration?
We have a bunch of written standards, but I try to, if I have to, I stop someone from coming on the page, and if I really have to, I erase every single post they ever made, if they're posting pornography or doing something really egregious. But anybody who sends me a nice email and goes, look, dude, I was boozing last night, I got drunk, I shouldn't have done that, I apologize, I'm very happy having him come back on the page. And as far as the social interaction goes, we've had at least one wedding from people who met on the page, and I hope we have a few more.
Wow.
A male-female wedding?
It was a male-female wedding, yes. Not a Massachusetts wedding.
One of the components, and I guess we alluded to this briefly early in the conversation, but was the international flavor to the underground. And I think some people don't necessarily realize that. Myself and Brendan and I are both actually Canadians, so we partake in the Canadian forum as well. But how did that idea come about? And how many different countries are on there now, Kierick? I mean, it seems like there's a lot.
We do get stats on regular viewers, and every week we have people coming from 60 different countries or 80 different countries, something like that. But again, I'm just not a smart enough guy when I first set up the page to go, you know what, I bet there's going to be people that are Portuguese-speaking that are going to be really interested in this, and so I'm going to set one up for them. It's just a matter of keeping my eyes and ears open, and if somebody says, hey, I really like this, and two other people chime in, then we do it, and it sort of builds from there. Basically, the whole thing is built on the enthusiasm that people feel for this sport. It's definitely not built on me being a real smart guy who can figure things out before anybody knows they need it.
So one of the things I wanted to ask you about, now that you're becoming not only famous on the underground, but gaining a certain amount of fame or infamy in the real world as well. Of course, you're featured in the Sam Sheridan book. He spoke very kindly of you in the book, and I got a laugh out of that when I first saw you appear as a character in his book, A Fighter's Heart. But now you may be a guest referee at the upcoming Kimbo-Mercer battle. Can you talk a little bit about how you got roped into that, and is that still a go?
That's definitely a go. I'm very much looking forward to it. The original Kimbo fight, where they're talking about that metal thing and that sort of thing appeared on the page. And then a buddy of mine, Sean Gannon, who's a decorated Boston police officer and very good NHB fighter, looked at it and he goes, "I'll fight that guy." So I made a couple of phone calls, sent a couple of emails, and they basically got together, had a sparring match. It was pretty dramatic, and I think that was the start of people in MMA really going, "Oh my God, who is this Kimbo guy?" even though he ended up on the losing end of that one, I think he proved himself to be a very, very, very tough guy. Maybe not as tough as that. Well, not as tough as Sean Gannon, but I could say that about 5 billion people on this planet. And so when Kimbo decided he wanted to compete in MMA, at the same time Ray Mercer decided he wanted to compete in MMA, so I think it was natural for the matchmaker to put those two together. I think it was reasonably natural to have me be the referee, because I'm definitely one of the most experienced referees in the Northeast for this sport.
Carrick, that leads into my next question in regards to Kimbo and Ray Mercer, etc. And you mentioned Sean Gannon. I know Dana White in the UFC caught a little bit of flack, or there was some criticism from certain circles when they had Sean Gannon compete in the UFC. What were your thoughts on that then? I mean, as far as the detractors from that, who said that having someone like Sean Gannon involved in the UFC and being associated with Kimbo and street fighting, etc., is bad for the sport. What are your thoughts on that? And did you receive any criticism on the site for having the threads that related to Kimbo Slice, etc.?
Oh yeah, I mean, there's people on the website that'll criticize you for wearing shoes. There was definitely some criticism, but Sean Gannon absolutely belongs in the UFC. His debut fight there, he got taken out early, but that's just because styles make fights or they don't make fights. And he fought a really, really, really good wrestler and got taken down and pounded out. But if you'd seen him in there against Cabbage Carrera or somebody like that, it could have been one for the ages.
Yeah.
Sean Gannon's a very, very skilled fighter. Very good at submissions. He's got tremendous hands. He's got the best body shot. He's got the best liver shot in the whole sport. No question in my mind whatsoever. And there's no question in my mind that he deserved to be in the UFC.
Mm. Well, what's your opinion then? What's your opinion then of Kimbo as a fighter?
My opinion of Kimbo as a fighter is I had utterly underestimated him. I looked at what he did in those first clips, and I thought he was a big, strong guy with rudimentary skills. But when I saw the battle with Sean Gannon, I was stunned. Kimbo has like damn near national class boxing skills, and I'm embarrassed that I didn't notice it until I really saw it in action. Kimbo's a very, very scary guy. And the Avalon brothers, his trainers, are grappling geniuses. And it's going to be a very interesting fight.
You talked about the Avalon brothers, and of course they're associated with Gabriel Gonzaga. I wanted to hear your thoughts.
That's Marcos Avalon.
Oh, Avalon.
I was talking about similar name, but I was talking about the Avalon brothers down in Florida.
Oh, okay.
In Miami.
But on that topic then, what are your thoughts on Gabriel Gonzaga and Mirko Krokop? It seems like everybody is looking beyond that fight. Of course, Duran Couture, possibly Mirko Krokop. Your thoughts on that fight? Do you think people are looking past Gonzaga a little bit too much, Carrick?
Yeah, I think anybody who looks past Napal is out of their tree. In the last year and a half, he won the Mundials in a gi. He got second in ADCC without a gi, and he went 3-0 in the UFC. It's as good a record as exists in the history of the sport, I think, for cross-competing athletes. He's definitely the scariest guy I've ever trained with. If he gets positioned, I mean, I'm 205. I still compete a little bit. I was 2-0 last year. If he gets positioned on me, I honestly feel like I'm at the risk of being injured. If he jumps up to knee on belly or something, I feel like I'm going to have a little trip to the hospital. Obviously, if Krokop can keep it standing, he's got the advantage. But if Napal gets him on his back, he's going to take his arm and pull it off and hang it over his mantelpiece at home.
So, just going back to when is Mercer Kimbo supposed to happen, and what's the card going to look like? Is it going to be a pure MMA card? Who's the brain and money trust behind it?
It's the Cage Fury Fighting Championship. It's a pure MMA card, and the contest is going to be held under pure MMA rules. It's same gloves, same athletic commission, same test, same everything. It's going to be the main event on a regular MMA card.
And that where's the location?
It's going to be in Atlantic City. And you'll have to check the CFFC website, which is cagefuryfighting.com. But it's sometime in June.
And is Kimbo going to be allowed to keep his beard?
Kimbo is absolutely allowed to keep his beard. I've heard in boxing they don't like big beards because it supposedly can smother punches. But Kimbo is gonna be allowed to have that characteristic beard.
Kierick, my last question for you is in regards to Joe Rogan, and he was one of the more outspoken proponents of Kimbo and Sean Gannon being involved in the UFC. He said on the pay-per-views, etc., and other public forums that he thought that there was nothing wrong with Sean Gannon competing in the UFC, and that people were, again, quote him, but essentially people were too faint of heart, that they were getting all worked up about nothing, that it was fighting, it was no difference, and there was an audience for that kind of thing. He's also one of the main people I find that when I go on the site that there's a lot of interest surrounding around Joe Rogan. He's a regular contributor and poster at MMA.tv. And as well, he's also spoken openly about the site on UFC broadcasts and pay-per-views. Have you ever met Joe Rogan? Do you have a relationship with him at all? And what are your thoughts on him talking about the site on UFC broadcasts? Has that helped expand the site?
I first knew about Joe Rogan when he was about 16 years old. People said there was a Taekwondo kid from Jay Kim's in Boston, actually. It was in Boston proper, and they said nobody's ever seen anything like this guy. And then a character wandered into my gym who'd competed against him and had gotten kicked so hard in the head, the doctor said he had to basically quit contact sports. Couldn't have any more contact with
wow.
him. And that was when he was doing Taekwondo. Since then, he's got years and years and years of Muay Thai under his belt. He's got a brown belt in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. He's a huge credit to this sport. He's done a huge amount for it. Yeah, I have had the pleasure of meeting him several times now.
I always get a kick out of Rogan's posts on the Underground, especially, and he seems to be a magnet for the lovers and the haters. Now I gotta ask you right before we go, who's the biggest and who's the biggest and your most favorite heel on the Underground?
Well, I gotta tell you guys, there's a little place in my heart for the very first troll. I didn't even know what trolling was. I barely knew what a message board was. And there was a heel called the Don Break Your Army. This is back on Tim Musell's forum 10 years ago. And the Don used to post blurred out pictures and go, here's a picture of me working out with Hickson. And I posted, you can't see anything in that picture. That could be two birds attacking each other. You've got to be kidding. I fell for it 100%. So ever since then, I would have to say there's definitely been a warm spot in my heart for him because he got me. He originally posted as the Don Break Your Army, and he's probably had 100 different screen names since then. But whoever he is, that's definitely my favorite one.
I've even seen threads, actually, where there's bounties, people willing to put up money to find out who a troll's real name and identity was. Kierick, I would think that you're not in favor of bounties being being crossed over on the Underground.
No, it's definitely you have to take the internet with a huge grain of salt and a lot of humor. If I took everything seriously, I read even about myself on the internet, I'd shoot myself in the head. you definitely can't take it too seriously.
Are you ever amazed at people's inability to sort of get it when they're being baited?
I do, but falling for it occasionally myself, I also have sympathy for people when they don't. There's one character, Ferox, who's an art student in Ireland. And he invented the Keyboard Fighting Society. And he's got a picture of himself wearing a black belt with a big keyboard under his arm, talking about the zones of death in Taekwondo and how it won't work against grappling. And literally over 100 people fell for it and were ridiculing him for it. And I fall for it too occasionally, so I can empathize.
Well, Kirik, we appreciate coming on the show. Like I said at the top of the interview, I think there are a lot of people out there are extremely interested in the site, and it's a great site, and it's really, I think, also, you talk about Dana White and the UFC, but I think some credit should be given to the Underground and MMA.TV for helping the sport grow, and certainly keep people together and communicating during the quote-unquote dark years when MMA was, people are out there trying to ban it. So thank you for the site, and thank you for coming on the program.
Thanks for not revealing Kelsey's secret identity as a poop shoot box.
Thank you so much, guys. It was great.
All right, Gary.
Cheers. Thanks a lot.
A person who gets punched in the face for a living doesn't know what fear is. Pain doesn't exist if you train more than 30 hours a week. Someone who fights with broken bones has a totally different definition of agony. Bodog Fight mixed martial artists know that fear, pain, and agony won't last. But the glory of having your hand raised at the end of the fight, that lasts forever. Bodog Fight, St. Petersburg. Don't miss any mixed martial arts action. Check your local listings or visit BodogFight.com for details.
The best coverage of the toughest fighters in the toughest sport can only be found in Full Contact Fighter. For over a decade now, FCF has been bringing mixed martial arts fans across the globe in-depth reporting of the world's greatest sport. From Brazil, Japan, Europe, Canada, and the U.S., FCF brings you all the fighter bios, event reports, training and technique tips any avid MMA fan would want. Every month, 12 times a year, we do it. Full Contact Fighter is your best source for MMA coverage. Pick up the latest edition of the paper by subscribing at www.fcfighter.com or call 516-676-0033. Again, the number 516-676-0033. Full Contact Fighter, the undefeated, no-holds-barred news source of the world. And when you call, tell them that FCF Radio sent you.
You're listening to the Full Contact Fighter Radio Network.
Welcome back to Full Contact Fighter Radio, and Brendan, you got to see the fights last night. I didn't. I didn't have no one that I knew, etc. Had a satellite, etc. I think it was shown on Bell Express, wasn't it, up in Canada?
If you were a true fan, Kelsey, you would have gone out and bought a satellite dish.
Yeah, it's true.
And I remember back in the day, Kelsey, having to rent a cable box for the privilege of buying UFC pay-per-views.
Yeah. You're a hero. There's no doubt about it.
But I did it, you know.
You know, you talk about Kirik at the beginning of the show. Don't discount what Brendan Lear's done for MMA as well. Yeah, no, I won't bother going on my whole rant about the delayed week, etc. for Bodog Fight with Viewer's Choice. I'm trying to work on my anger issue, so we won't discuss that. But Brendan,
well, Kelsey, to their credit, Viewer's Choice did, I think, debut MILF Humpers 4 last night, and also Big Boot Bangaroo 16.
Bangaroo 16, huh?
Yeah, they had a lot of bandwidth tied up with some high end pay per view stuff. So
it's understandable. It's understandable. I mean, then I should really no. You're just opening up a whole Pandora's box of terrible jokes. Anyways, the big news, of course, Fedor Emelianenko defeating Matt Lindland. And for the reports I've read, Steve Morocco was there for Full Contact Fighter, his report. Brendan, sounds like Lindland caught him with a pretty decent shot and was trying to get him down, and there was some rope hanging on to, etc. How long of that went on, and how much of an impact do you think it had on the fight?
Well, I only saw the fight once, and definitely the case that Fedor was opened up. He had a really substantial cut on his eyebrow, so definitely a cut that could have stopped the fight if it would have been worked. If Lindland could have gotten some position just to work on that, you know, something like just even a sloppy elbows or some cross face would have opened that right up and definitely put Fedor in jeopardy. So Lindland has that glimmer of hope at the beginning of the fight, and he does. He's got double underhooks with Fedor up against the ropes. Now he's trying to wrench Fedor over, and the question is, you know, Fedor's not holding on with two hands onto the ropes, but he certainly is taking advantage of the ropes to prevent the takedown. And there was some frustration, and the referee did warn Fedor a couple times, but the whole sequence happened very quickly. Lindland did initiate the takedown, but on the way down, Fedor twisted it around, landed on top, and then basically had a top position with many, many transitions, you know, before the end of the fight.
Mm-hmm.
But it was, you know, two things were impressive. Lindland's coming out, opening up Fedor, and getting him up against the ropes was impressive. But that doesn't take anything with Fedor's work on the ground. You know, Lindland certainly didn't land in a position he's never been in before. He landed, I think, in half. Fedor landed on top of Lindland, and, you know, Lindland had, half guard. So Fedor did work Lindland and submit him very readily on the ground. So I think Lindland's got himself to blame for that, but he does have a legitimate beef about the takedown, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think the thing that impressed me was I wouldn't have said that Fedor could, if he had decent position, just go out there and submit Lindland. That's one of the things I didn't see happening, and that's exactly the thing he did. So
overall, do you think it really does it further entrench Fedor's claim, or what many people perceive as the number one fighter in the world? Or is this just a fight where you think he was expected to win and went out and did so?
I think he definitely was expected to win. But I think it did, for me, it impressed me more than, say, for instance, the Mark Hunt fight, because it showed me that, you know, Fedor has good enough ground to go out there and submit, a Greco guy on the ground, and probably one of the best Greco MMA fighter that there is right now. So
mm-hmm.
Very impressive. It was very, very impressive to me. I was actually quite surprised that he worked a number of different submissions. I think he even went for what looked like kind of an Achilles lock at one point, or some kind of reverse ankle lock. It was really interesting to see the way he fell. He fell out of that, and then he reversed that position as well. So Fedor was really he's very masterful on the ground, and that was very interesting to see.
A couple other notable results from last night's card. Nick Thompson, I think a lot of people probably would have had Nick Thompson as an underdog against Eddie Alvarez, the MFC Mixed Fighting Championship welterweight champion. Some people regard Eddie Alvarez as one of the better up-and-coming fighters at that weight. And Nick Thompson, from reading the reports, sounds like he was impressive at standing with Eddie, which I don't think a lot of people expected, and beat Eddie Alvarez. How was that fight, Brendan?
I think my impression was that, to be quite honest, that Thompson dominated the stand-up, and he is basically he was wearing Alvarez down so well with Muay Thai kicks, you know, inside outside leg kicks. They were brutal, hard. Alvarez didn't check any of them. Alvarez threw one back that I think the turning point in the fight is in the second. Alvarez threw a really hard low kick, and Thompson actually checked it, and Alvarez was done after that. I think he hurt himself in that, and he was literally limping at times in the second. So he had no I think his plan was to charge in and get went on his feet, and the goat robbed him of that, and robbed him of that opportunity. And Thompson literally looked like he's in a different weight class last night. He was just towered over Alvarez. He looked like he was 20 pounds heavier.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see what Bodog Fight can do with bringing in fighters for someone like Nick Thompson. Certainly, he's a very accomplished fighter, and I've seen him fight a couple times, as I'm sure a lot of MMA fans have. But he's an entertaining fighter, and I think there's definitely, with Eddie Alvarez, he's a younger, up-and-coming fighter, and there is certainly some buzz around him as their champion. But in saying that, I mean, I think Nick Thompson will represent Bodog Fight in that division very well, too. So Alexander Emelianenko not stopping Eric Pelle, I guess most people, no one really expected that fight to get outside the first round. Brendan, your thoughts on that fight?
That fight was interesting. Pelle came in really, I don't want to say light, but he was under three, and his boiler was sort of slowly disappearing. So he looked pretty good from that perspective. It looks like he had some gas, and I think Alexander actually almost gassed himself out, trying to finish Pelle in the first round. He had him in trouble a couple times, and Pelle was taking some really hard shots. But Alexander punched himself out. It looked like almost punched himself out at least once in the first. And I think the writing was on the wall, but I think it took Alexander a lot longer than he thought. And again, there was that glimmer of maybe he's not in the best shape. But I think, to his credit, I think he wasn't that
think it's going to be interesting to see if the mainstream media picks up on this story. It's probably a little too soon, but the fact that Russian President Vladimir Putin was in attendance, and I guess he had a party afterwards for some of the fighters and people. It sounds like they're saying that Fedor Emelianenko probably went and attended, etc. Did they show him a few times on the pay-per-view, Brennan?
Oh, yeah, they flashed him a number of different times. The only thing that diminished from the whole night was Jean-Claude Van Damme was sitting right next to him. So I don't know exactly what was going on there, whether he's a European diplomat now or what. Maybe he might even be the Prime Minister of Brussels, for all we know. I'm not sure.
But in all seriousness, I mean, that it will be really interesting to see if the mainstream media catches on to this, particularly because in Russia, Brennan, it was a pretty busy weekend for Russian police. There's several scandals coming out of that country this past weekend with protests, anti-Putin, anti-government protests being quelled, and many arrests, etc. So the fact that he attended Bodog Fight the very same weekend when a large focus of the Western media has been on Russia and what's going on in that country, that's more of a political issue. But in saying that, it will be interesting to see if the mainstream media picks up on this and kind of delves further into what Putin attended exactly and what Bodog Fight is, etc. Who knows?
Well, I think there were actually a few European heads of state. I think there was a former Italian prime minister there, and this is just sort of listening of the people rounding off. But there's lots of security there, lots of seemingly very important folks knocking around, hobnobbing. It was kind of interesting to see actually. The pay-per-view itself wasn't as slick as I thought it was going to be. After this being the second one, I don't know whether that has to do with it being in Russia or whatnot, but reflecting on what the kinds of things that Jeff Osborne was telling us, I thought that the commentary, the play-by-play was okay. I think that old boxing guy is trying to catch up as best he can, and he has made a few gaffes, but I think overall his play-by-play was acceptable. It was interesting because it does give it one of the things that I noticed was it does give it that old sort of boxing. Boxing sound, and he has such a notable voice and notable style that it really sort of harkened back to another day. But he was, overall, he was very respectful and seemed to be doing his best to sort of get up to speed.
Maybe it's time to have a worldwide presidential and world leader mixed martial arts event. You could have Putin up against maybe Stephen Harper, Prime Minister of Canada. See how George W. Bush fares in the ring. What do you think? I think Putin would probably kick some ass, man. He's a black belt in judo.
Well, it's it doesn't surprise me that he's a fight fan, but that's a pretty huge thing, It's like it's like George Bush sitting ringside at the UFC.
Yeah.
I'm not sure. And again, there's many jokes to be made there, but that's a fairly big thing. So that's a fairly big coup d'etat. But like you said, Putin is a martial arts aficionado as well, so I imagine it certainly wasn't onerous him being there. I imagine he wanted to be there.
Well, Fedor Emelianenko has also gone, in several interviews that I've read, has made a point discussing the fact that he's very pro-Putin and thinks he's doing a good job and that Russia needs a strong president and et cetera, et cetera. So I certainly think that in these times where Putin's undergoing a lot of criticism, that doesn't hurt Fedor Emelianenko, the fact that one of their more notable, famous athletes is such a strong supporter of his, that they probably are, at the very least, acquaintances.
The guy who explains Russian politics to me, I haven't seen in about a year, so I can't even attempt to understand what the implications of the Putin-Fedor allegiance would be, other than an army of cloned Fedors would be fairly substantial Russian force in the world, I imagine.
Pretty cool announcement today, I thought. Strike Force and Elite XC. They've announced a couple more fights for the June 22nd card, which is to be headlined by Frank Shamrock, Phil Baroni. And I think it just came out earlier today, saw the press release. And I think this is a really interesting fight at middleweight for the Elite XC middleweight championship. They're going to have Joey Villasenor versus Marilla Ninjahua, Brennan.
Mm-hmm. Well, didn't we see that coming?
Yeah. But it's nice to see that it's confirmed, and they've got Kung Lee. He's going to be fighting Tony Frickland. as well. Paul Buntel is going to be fighting on that card. So they put together some interesting fights to back up the Frank Shamrock Phil Baroni fight. So
yeah, I'll be. We'll see how that card's going. We'll see how that card's going to shape up. I think they need more of in that big show is more legitimate, you know, more legitimate MMA matchups and not less glam and more substance. So that those two fights are definitely a step ahead in the right direction.
Well, I think Ninja Huwal versus Vila Senor, I think, could be very entertaining. I think I'd go with Vila Senor based on his performance against David Loazo and the fact that Marilyn Ninja Hua has really fallen on some tough times. He's coming off a win over Mark Weir. And, of course, all of his losses in his career, I think he's got about 7 or 8 losses now, they're all up against very notable opposition. It's funny, though, that the sport is getting to that point, Brendan. I mean, now there's some real history forming in the sport. And, I mean, it's not to people... To certain people, it doesn't really seem like that long ago, but when you think about it, 5-6 years ago, Ninja Hua was being discussed by some people as potentially the top 5, top 10 fighters for certain in the world.
Oh, for sure, and I think that'll be a great fight. I remember the first time I saw him fight, how impressive it was, and it would be even better, if they could get some of his some of the natural rivals. From Shootabox into that organization as well, and we'll see if they have the wherewithal basically to get those kinds of fighters in the show. I sure hope they do. It would be great.
The UFC announced another fight for the May 26th card, which is going to be headlined by Chuck Liddell versus Quinton Jackson, Josh Berkman versus Carol Parisian. I know Parisian's one of your favorite fighters to watch, as I have to admit, mine too. Very entertaining fighter. And I think that fight has the potential to be outstanding. I think people sometimes forget Berkman kind of gets lost in the vast, vast depth of the welterweight division in the UFC. But this guy, I think, is like 5-1 in the UFC. So that's going to be a great fight.
Yeah, oh no, there's no doubt it will be. And now we have two Carlos to watch. We have Big Carl and Little Carl in the form of Manny as well.
Yeah.
I'm happy to say the best news of my weekend was not that I got to watch Bodog, but... My wife sat down and watched a recording of The Ultimate Fighter 5 and is now compelled, back interested in the show, as she left after the boring number 2. She's back into it.
Yeah.
The lightweights have drawn her back in.
We've kind of forgotten to talk about that, and I'd have to agree with you. I mean, if you like the drama, I mean, I personally liked last season because there were some really interesting matchups and some very well-known fighters, but definitely this year it's... It does harken back to the first season in many respects. As far as the drama goes, it's almost ridiculous. I mean, it's crazy.
Well, you have to kind of wonder because we all know what Nick Diaz is like, and you all say, well, is his brother going to be like that? And lo and behold, bingo bango, they got the exact replica, and then Manny turns out to be cut out of exactly the same cloth. So. It was high drama, almost a little bit too soapish.
But that's what people like, It's,
but you and I worked with people like that for many years. So it's nice to be able to only watch it on TV.
Yeah, but definitely, it looks like it's going to be an entertaining season on that front. There's no question about it. And I mean, using your wife as an example, I mean, it's true. I think that. The UFC is going to want this kind of season. They realize that the first season was so memorable. I mean, sometimes on Sportsnet, I don't know what it's like in the United States, but on Sportsnet up here, for a brief period of time, they were showing Ultimate Fighter Season 1 repeats. And there's a couple episodes where they would be on, I'd be flipping through the channels, and I'd want to watch, It was like, oh, yeah, this is the episode of Chris Leben, punches down the door, And I don't think you can say that so much for the rest of the seasons. As far as being a diehard MMA fan, for sure, there's been some great action over the last few seasons. But the reality is that season 4 for The Ultimate Fighter, the ratings dropped. So I think that they're really trying to encourage a very dramatic season. And even from the get-go, I mean, when we had BJ Penn on the show and the way he was talking about Jens Pulver, the way that the relationship began between the two of them on the show in the first episode, it just seems like everyone's really hyped to create a fairly heated environment.
Yeah, it was, you know, I think it's going to be entertaining because there is that animosity, you know. We haven't seen any prayer circles yet. We are not likely to see any prayer circles. More than likely, we'll be able to see, we'll probably inevitably see some gun violence from what it looks like, how things are unfolding. So, and that's either between BJ and Jens or any one of the fighters, it seems. So, no, I think it's a lot of acrimony built in, and that's what pushed the show over the top, and that it was a good show to watch. And the fights, you know, the fights were pretty unremarkable in the first television show, I thought. So, you need something else to sort of draw them in.
One last thing that I wanted to bring up before we leave. Sherdog.com had an interview with Quinton Jackson this past week, and he was talking about the fight with Chuck Liddell, and I don't remember who, couldn't tell who it was that asked him, but there was some question in regards to whether or not he thought he should be fighting Chuck Liddell yet, etc. And I just thought I'd bring it up because he echoed a lot of the same sentiments that I think that we've had and discussed in the past, although some people, I think Wombats disagreed with me, but don't quote me on that. But basically, Quinton Jackson saying that, yeah, he's looking forward to the fight, that he didn't want to put the fight off based on any kind of mental issues that he has, because, I mean, let's face it, since he faced Chuck, he's lost several times, hasn't looked as impressive since he beat Chuck Liddell. But he just basically was saying in the interview, Brendan, that he thinks the UFC made a mistake, that they should have tried to give him a couple more fights to make him more notable, and that, frankly, he doesn't really deserve a title shot because he's only had one fight in the UFC.
Well, you know, I think they made a marketing mistake, and I've always said, you know, I think Quentin's probably the most marketable fighter that they have in the UFC. Period. Full stop. You know,
mm-hmm.
I think he's got now that Tito is now that Tito's reputation may be forever tarnished. I think Quentin is definitely the next guy, and he's not even a bad guy, right? He's the perfect, you know, he fits a perfect demographic. He can pull in a perfect demographic of people who are interested in those outlandish personalities, and he really has a larger than life personality. So he's one of those guys that that's a decent fighter that has personality to spare. So
yeah,
I think in that respect, I guess maybe they were looking too far ahead and thought that fighters like Shogun and fighters like Vandalay can bring that kind of attention that they were looking for in fights that Chuck is going to have coming up, but at the same time, I think you know, I don't know. We'll see. Maybe, you know, who knows? Maybe Chuck is ready to go. Maybe Chuck's ready to retire, and he said, "I'll give you three more fights, and that's it." So,
yeah.
How do you space those out? Is he going to fight forever?
You actually, and then you brought up something about Tito, and that does remind me because I did want to ask you about it. I mean, first off, did you see that hour and a half long tease on Spike TV as far as the Dana White?
I didn't want to watch it, and then it recorded, and I sat down, and I was just kind of dicking around for 5 minutes. I had to go somewhere, and I ended up getting sucked in and watched the whole goddamn thing.
Yeah. No, it had some interesting moments, and
yeah.
I thought there were certain things about Dana White and watching him prepare, etc., were interesting. But I think, I mean, ultimately, when you look at it, it was, I mean, unless Tito Ortiz refused to comment, or, I mean, he gave public statements in regards to why he dropped out of that fight. I mean, on his MySpace, on his website. And the fact that they didn't even post that or refer to that really makes me think that, Brendan, like you mentioned, that Tito Ortiz could be, I think he's got one fight left on this contract, or is it two? But I think that they could be preparing the road for his exit. I mean, he's fighting Rashad Evans. If he was to lose to Rashad Evans, and you would have to think that the relations between him and Dana White have soured considerably once again. You think that maybe they're paving the exit road out of the UFC for him again, Brendan?
I think that's probably exactly what's happening. I think if Rampage loses to Chuck and Tito loses to Rashad, there's no use having them both around. I think Rampage is by far the more marketable guy. And Rampage will be the gatekeeper at 205, you know, until something else comes along, until he can stand up to get another shot. And why keep Tito around is the question. You know, he probably costs a lot, I don't think it's as unfair as maybe you do that they didn't post his response, because it was really came out at the last minute, right? And it really looked like, I read it, and it wasn't convincing. You know, I certainly didn't come away with it thinking, yeah, you have a great point. They signed a contract to do this little thing, and he didn't do it. So that's the way I kind of look at things like this. If your boss says, if your boss tells you you can get in the ring with him and punch him in the face, you know, there's no reason other than to punch him in the face to do it, you know.
Well, I think...
You don't hold out for more money.
I don't necessarily agree with everything you're saying there. I mean, to an extent, you can obviously clearly argue, well, it was just supposed to be a sparring match and the risk of injury, et cetera, is probably fairly minimal. But I think you also have to remember, too, that the timing of this is probably what's key for him. And I think that more so, rather than the injury, the possible injury, the reason I suspect that he probably decided not to do this was, what if he goes up against Dana White, doesn't fare that well, or it doesn't look so hot, then will that give Rashad Evans that much more confidence? And I think this is I think Tito Ortiz, he sees the writing on the wall. I mean, this is a crucial fight for him. He did not look impressive against Forrest Griffin. I mean, even if you date back to Vitor Belfort, which the UFC used that fight as sort of a launching pad to the fact that Tito deserved a rematch with Chuck. I personally still think that Vitor Belfort won that fight. He's been beaten by Chuck Liddell twice. If Rashad beats him, his time at the top of the UFC 205 division is probably done. You're talking probably at least a couple of years of winning several significant fights to get up top again. So I think that he probably wanted to drop out, maybe so because of the injury, but as well just because he's concentrating on training and this is a must-win for him. So I don't think that the fact that he dropped out is too horrendous. But I definitely thought that the show, I thought it was kind of funny. It just seemed like it was a blatant pro-Dana White sort of piece. They sort of had footage of Tito Ortiz earlier on and some comments, and then the fact that they didn't even really refer to why he dropped out, I thought was kind of curious. But
well, I guess, it leads everyone to imagine why that was, and they can go find out for themselves. But that's the thing, was he smart to drop out? Probably, because he certainly had nothing to gain by fighting Dana White. But did he have anything to gain by fighting Dana White when he put that in the contract or when he was making the arrangement? So that's one of those things where you sometimes if you beak off, you got to step up and take your medicine.
Yeah, that's definitely one thing I agreed with Dana. It was the fact that talking about how the fight became public knowledge so quickly, and then originally it was just supposed to be sort of the two of them going down into the gym and sparring, etc., and then all of a sudden they had to deal with the athletic commission and getting the fight sanctioned, etc. So who knows? I mean, who really knows what happened in the big
for
background?
Me it's very simply a talk the talk, walk the walk scenario. Mm-hmm. If you want to say you want to fight your boss and your boss says go ahead, then you fight your boss. That's all there is to it.
And that is
most
Brendan's subtle way of challenging his boss.
That.
That's your subtle way of challenging your boss to a fight.
No, my boss is a very nice lady, and I respect her too much to fight her.
Jeez, you're just saying that because we're alive. Well,
I certainly have many bosses who I would have gladly paid a great portion of my salary to fight.
Yes, I can echo those sentiments. Not my FCF bosses, of course.
No.
Anyways, Brendan, on that note, let's get out of here. Thank you for your comments once again. You've enlightened all of us, as you usually do.
Kelsey, your earnestness is only overdone by your excitement for doing the show today.
Right. All right, buddy. Well, take care, and we'll talk to you soon.
Adios.